Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Hergert. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Howard M. Ross, MD, a colon and rectal surgeon, chair of surgery, and surgeon-in-chief at Hackensack University Medical Center, and a professor and chair of the Department of Surgery at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine, to discuss developments in the management of colon cancer in light of March being Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month. During our exclusive interview, Ross shared his advice to healthcare professionals regarding the detection and treatment of patients with colon cancer, unmet needs for this patient population, the role of minimally invasive surgery, and the need to address and overcome health disparities that affect this population. What advances have moved the needle forward in terms of treatment for patients with colorectal cancer?
The treatment of colon cancer has changed a bit over the last decade and certainly in the last couple of years. I'd say the most dramatic changes have occurred in a few areas. One is recognition of increasing colon and rectal cancer in the young, both at extraordinarily young ages, 20 to 39 and 40 to 54, the rates have been increasing really since the mid-1980s and certainly by the 1990s. So the recognition of colon cancer in the young has changed all of our practice patterns. Certainly any rectal bleeding in an adult should have always been followed up by an exam and then colonoscopy. But oftentimes those at younger ages or in younger age groups would not necessarily have received that recommendation. And now we know that they certainly need colonoscopy. Another great addition to our armamentarium and change is the increasing complete response rate that patients who undergo neoadjuvant chemoradiotherapy are exhibiting. So 20% of patients approximately are having a complete response, and the watch and wait paradigm is really beginning to move from experimental and rare to more commonplace. Patients who are in that group with a complete response certainly can be considered for watch and wait if many factors are met. So it's a very careful decision made between the patient, the physician, and clearly beyond the scope of just a simple answer, but it's exciting certainly, and I think represents the future. And finally, I think that the recognition of cancer in the young has led us to pursue any modality possible. So the increasing utilization of Cologuard as a non-invasive test or screen certainly has helped us to break down some of the barriers to screening in young age groups.
Have there been any specific advances or changing trends with regard to surgery in this space?
So the surgical technique to remove cancers has certainly expanded. We went from acceptance of laparoscopy in the 1990s and 2000s to then pushing the envelope to utilization of robotics, and then even very novel approaches like transanal total mesorectal excision, essentially taking colon cancers out from, instead of from inside of the abdomen downward and out, from the bottom up. And that was a completely novel approach that's seen increasing utilization. All of those approaches, whether it be robotic surgery for colon and rectal cancer, transanal total mesorectal excision, are all under vigorous study. So all have their pluses and minuses, and all have to be carefully considered. But it's nice to see the palette expanding of options that surgeons have, especially when you combine the booming gains in technology. So what we consider a robot now in 5 years might be totally different. Currently, when surgeons sit at a console and move independent robotic arms, it's very possible that through a small 1-inch incision, two will come into the abdomen and five arms will come out. And who knows where we'll end up. So I think we're seeing the beginning of a revolution with regards to the technical removal of colon cancers. And when you combine that with the improvement in chemotherapy and chemoradiotherapy and immunotherapy, you're really talking about a changing landscape in colon and rectal cancer.
How are some of these newer techniques being adapted to clinical practice?
generally, most advances in technical approaches to cancer start at small institutions where one very advanced surgeon has a novel approach, and then he or she gets his colleagues to utilize that. And then there are ultimately prospective randomized trials. And we've seen that in laparoscopic surgery for colon cancer. We've seen trials for laparoscopic rectal cancer, and we've seen the ROLAR trial in robotic approaches. And some of those don't show necessarily advantages in patient outcomes. But the question is, what patient outcomes are we looking at and what's really important? Increased visualization might be very important to the surgeon, but if it doesn't result in a length of stay advantage, is it a true difference? I would argue, yes, it is. But, you know, perhaps insurers or other market contenders would say, no, it's not. So we're seeing all this evaluated. And I think that the evaluation process of new technologies is critically important. It is absolutely very important to really ferret out what's an advance versus what's marketing. And most things do have advances, and most things are never as good as their first reports.
What research opportunities are you keeping an eye on?
I think that there are many frontiers that are really exciting now in colon and rectal surgery and cancer care. One of which is the microbiome, both it's the makeup of bacteria in the colon, how that affects our technical outcomes, whether it would be anastomotic leak, or how the environment itself affects the development of cancer. We don't have great explanations for why colon cancer in the young has really been dramatically increased. And it's got to be a combination of the environment. Yeah, I wouldn't say genetics have changed. It's possible. But it's the environment and how that affects the microbiome. And when we look at health and when we answer questions about robotics and the technical, really most of our health as human beings, it comes from our social determinants. So I think we really have to be focusing on the social determinants of colon and rectal health and overall health. And I think that's happening currently. There are many exciting areas where we're looking at environment and where people live and what they eat and how colon cancer develops. And then clearly there's the effect of race and social and economic status on outcomes, all of which get to access and education and awareness, which is, you know, amazingly important and I think underserved.
Can you describe some of the biological disparities in colorectal cancer and what efforts are being made to bridge some of these gaps?
I was just recruited to Hackensack University Medical Center from Philadelphia. And in Philadelphia, 4 miles above City Hall and Center City, the life expectancy is 20 years less in North Philadelphia than it is downtown. There's no reason for that except for the social determinants of health. And whether it be violence, whether it be lack of opportunity to have screening, whether it's understanding what is available, or actually whether it's even offered are certainly factors. So we here at Hackensack are going to look into this, both from the medical student perspective, how we can get the students and residents involved in research into determinants of health, and also equity. And what I'm really looking at our outcomes and saying, are we delivering to the community with which we serve and which we live equitable care?
With March being Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, what is your message to fellow practitioners regarding the detection and treatment of this disease?
I think March being Colorectal Awareness Month is critical to recognize a few things. One, any rectal bleeding needs to be followed up with an exam and colonoscopy. Though overwhelmingly most rectal bleeding is from an anal rectal source and benign, meaning no threat to the human. Some is not, and we have to be very aggressive at looking at it. It's time to rid ourselves of the embarrassment of an exam and get screened and get examined when you have an issue. The second is that recognition of colon cancer in the young and any symptoms, whether they be bleeding, change in bowel habits, unbelievably important. I would still say, like with all cancers, don't smoke. Try to eat a healthy diet, try not to be too heavy. And March lends us an opportunity as spring approaches to take a moment to pause about our health and really care. And though the colon is maybe not the most glamorous organ in the body, it's certainly one of the most important. And I think we have to rid ourselves of that stigma, be very brave, do what you need to do, and go on and live a good life.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back on Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and at Enclave SOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave on Air.